Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and the email address redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. There is also the YouTube channel, which I encourage you to head across and subscribe to, and check out the videos that I'm putting up there pretty much on a daily basis at this point. That will probably slow down at some stage in the off-season, but yeah, at the moment, there's quite a few videos going up over on the YouTube channel. Okay, we're here today back for another of the Season in Review podcasts, and today we're going to be talking about the Boston Celtics. The Celtics, a team which at the start of the season I was critical of the way that Brad Stevens handled the rotation. I wasn't really critical of Stevens as a coach. I was just critical of the way that he was handling things. In the end, though, it did work out. He proved himself to be a really good coach. That's something which I didn't doubt. But I still am critical of some of the rotations that he used. But the results worked for a team who had no business getting anywhere near the playoffs, finishing with the 7th seed in the East. Now, they predictably got their asses kicked by the Cavs in 4 games in the playoffs. But the fact that they got into the playoffs is, I guess you can class it as somewhat of a minor miracle, considering the level of talent on this team, added in with the injuries, the trades that they did during the season, trading away Rajon Rondo, trading away Jeff Green, and somehow getting better. It's definitely, it's a mark of respect towards Brad Stevens and to the way that this team fought. Doesn't mean they're a great fantasy team, though. There weren't huge amounts of fantasy options on this. There were fantasy options. There's no stars, there's no real guys who make or break and shape your team on this roster, though. And I'd say that's probably going to be the way it is for next season as well. They're not in line to get themselves a great draft choice with pick 16. They've got this cachet cachet is not the right pronunciation. Cache. I always get those words mixed up, even though they're spelled the same. There's a big cache of draft picks in the upcoming seasons, which they could end up packaging to help move up or anything like that. So they're a little bit of an unknown in terms of free agency and in the draft, but the way things currently stand with pick 16, you don't think that guy's going to come in and have a massive impact on fantasy leagues for next season at least. All right, let's get into talking about the players on this team, though. We'll start with the point guard situation, which obviously, as I mentioned, started off with Rajon Rondo as the team's starting point guard. Didn't end that way after he was traded to Dallas, and that ended up being a horrible flop for the Mavericks. Not that the Celtics got a huge amount back in that deal, but the pieces that they got back, Brandon Wright, Jay Crowder, and then they're able to turn Brandon Wright into part of the deal that enabled them to get Isaiah Thomas. You'd say it ended up working out as a pretty big win for the Celtics. We'll start with Isaiah Thomas, who started the season in Phoenix as part of that three-point guard backcourt. It never really worked for him all that well. He was still a really useful fantasy player. You could have got him real late in fantasy drafts with the specter of those other three guys really hampering what people thought he was going to do, but he was much better than what, even in Phoenix, much better than what people thought he was going to be able to achieve, and definitely outstripped a lot of people's rankings. He came in ranked for the season as the 65th best player in head-to-head leagues overall. Same in per-game value, 65th. But when he was in Boston, he was better. Post-All-Star breaks, after the trade, he was the 44th best player. And it's not that he was playing big minutes. He only played 26 minutes off the bench in those 21 games in Boston. He was the sixth man there. He didn't start, but he averaged 19 points, 2.3 threes, 5.5 assists, half a steal, 2 rebounds, 86 from the line, only 41 from the field, which is down from the 45 he shot the season before. But he was really, really good. And in the playoffs, he was incredible. He is clearly far and away the best player on this team. I had a question come in about Isaiah Thomas, so we'll tackle that now. Owen Daly, who's on Twitter, at Owen_Daly. IT had a PER over 30 in the playoffs. That's a good PER. Only 4 games, but does that continue next season? It obviously doesn't continue at 30. He's not going to be the MVP. But I think that, assuming he remains in Boston and assuming he plays a similar role, a 28 to 30 minute role off the bench, this team lacks guys who are actual scorers and playmakers. There's no reason why he's not a top 50 player next season. I probably would be a bit hesitant drafting him in the top 50, but that's possibly the place he's going to be. If we really look at his numbers, though, on a per 36-minute basis, he was the 11th ranked player. That's how good he was in those limited minutes. So if for some reason Brad Stevens said, all right, IT, you're going to play 35 minutes a night, then he's a definite top 50 guy. He's a top 30 sort of player. Top 50 is a marginal risk, but it's not that much of a risk. So I think that's probably where he sits for drafts heading into next season. He was good in Phoenix as well. He was still good playing in Phoenix, but he did step it up a level in Boston with less talent around him. And that's what he was able to do the season before in Sacramento with less talent around him. He was able to put up bonkers numbers in the 35 minutes a game that he played. And he was on a similar sort of path in Boston, just didn't play the same amount of minutes. So Isaiah Thomas is someone who, even if he stays in that six-man role, it doesn't mean anything. If someone's in a six-man role, it's not like, oh, we can't draft him, he's not going to be high enough. Because if he plays 30 minutes, it doesn't matter if you start those 30 minutes at the start of the game or if you start them 5 minutes into the game. Minutes are minutes, and production's production, and Thomas is really suited to that main guy, the man off the bench, and I think that's what we'll see from him next season. One other thing with Thomas, he's signed to a super friendly contract. He's got 3 more years at less than $20 million, and that's a fantastic asset that Boston is going to want to either use to its full potential or hold on to, because there's definitely a lot to like about the fact that he signed for so little money for the the future, the next 3 years. Point guard they drafted in the draft with the 6th pick, Marcus Smart. I thought he was in for a pretty decent fantasy season. Turns out he wasn't, but that's okay. He showed enough sort of signs to make you think, yeah, this guy can be a bit of a fantasy beast. And if you go back, I think I did this last season, I wrote retrospectives on the top 10 of each draft going back about 10 years and the fantasy rankings of those players. But those rankings, you have to bear in mind, are rankings that before I instituted my own ranking system, they were based on Basketball Monsters ranking system, so the numbers are a little bit off. But it still shows that so few rookies are able to have any sort of impact in their rookie season. So for Marcus Smart to finish at 140th per game, it's not that bad. Post All-Star break with Thomas in tow, 117th. So he was the starting point guard. As I said, Thomas played off the bench. But Smart, he showed, I think, more than I anticipated him in some areas. And definitely gave a solid foundation for years to come. His numbers for the season, 7.8 points, 1.5 threes. But the thing that I really look at and go, the 1.5 threes is a massive anomaly I wasn't expecting, but 3.3 rebounds, 3.1 assists, 1.5 steals. That's going to be the future of his value moving forward. He did all that in 27 minutes. If we look to what those numbers play out to in per 36 basis, we're talking 4.5 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 2 steals. And that's that as he gets better and more attuned with the NBA game, he's a guy who can be a 15-5-5 with 2 steals sort of guy. And based on what he was able to do last season, maybe 2 threes a game. He took a lot of 3-point attempts. Over half of his shots were from 3. He took 4.1 triples a game out of his 7.1 field goal attempts. And that wasn't something I necessarily thought he was going to be able to do as a pro, is to hit threes, because he's not a great shooter. He's only a 37% field goal shooter. He hit his threes at 34%, but he took enough of them, and that's the way that Brad Stevens encouraged him to play, and that plays into our hands for a fantasy point of view, especially for head-to-head leagues. If he's getting you threes, rebounds, assists, steals, that actually makes him probably more value than what a Rajon Rondo is, because he's a guy who can't get you those three-pointers. He's going to need to improve his free-throw percentage, which is just downright disgusting. Only 40% for the last 2 weeks of the season. Overall, 65. It's not good. You'd hope he gets a little bit better with it. Not necessarily holding our breath that he's going to become a great free throw shooter, though. But his overall value, I think, is pretty high. If people are a little bit cautious with Marcus Smart because of Isaiah Thomas being around and undervalue him in dynasty leagues, I'd be getting all over that. I think that there's a lot that he can offer. We could easily see Thomas being a top 50 guy and Smart being a top 90 guy next season. With Smart transitioning himself into a top 60 or top 70 guy and being one of those players who just racks up rebounds, assists, big steals, big threes, gets his scoring up, and if he just works on that percentage numbers, he could become a real beast for fantasy leagues. Not necessarily ever a top 10 or top 20 talent, but I think that he's going to be a very, very useful player starting from next season. Full off season, a full situation where likely you are going to be the starter. Smart, Thomas is going to play next to you and behind you, and we're going to use the 3-guard rotation with Avery Bradley. This is what you guys are going to do: play 30 minutes each, And that, I think, is going to work significantly into his favour. And even if it doesn't necessarily come true next season, I think the season after that we'll see some big, big numbers from Marcus Smart, especially in terms of those peripheral non-scoring stats. So I really like what Marcus Smart is able to do. He's got a very fantasy-friendly game. I know Mark Roberts was really high on him last season. He didn't quite turn out exactly how we both had him pretty high, but didn't quite turn out exactly what how we thought he would. But the 1.5 steals is a real key number, leading the Celtics in his steal numbers in just 27 minutes a game. That's something that is it's really promising, and he will get better at as he progresses, and he could become a league leader, a top three, top four guy in terms of steal numbers. So that's something that is really, really crucial for fantasy value, because we all know that those low volume categories like steals, if you can get up into the upper echelon, it's really, really invaluable when talking about fantasy value. Phil Pressey, the third point guard on this team, he's a guy that when he plays minutes, we've seen that he can produce. He played just 12 minutes a game, 3.5 points, but 2.3 assists, 0.6 steals. Not a good shooter, much like Smart. And he's stuck in a role where he's going to play behind Thomas and behind Smart. And there's also Evan Turner in the mix, who played a lot of point guard as well. So Pressey's in that situation where if lots of guys get injured, which could happen, Smart was injured, Isaiah Thomas was injured at times last season. So he could at some stage be in that position, but he's a daily fantasy option in those sort of circumstances, or is a stream-in player. I don't think there's much in terms of Dynasty League value for Phil Pressey heading into his third season. Well, he's actually a restricted free agent this season. I don't think there's much in terms of dynasty value for him moving forward. But he's always someone to keep an eye on when the situation opens, because he can be a guy who goes out there and drops 10 assists pretty comfortably. The other guard that's worth mentioning now is Avery Bradley, the team's starting two guard. Signed a four-year, $32 million contract last offseason, which seemed probably a little bit high. In light of the new salary cap details moving forward, it's probably not going to be that high at all, really. It's probably going to be a decent sort of contract, but Avery Bradley's not really that great of a player, to be honest. In Roto Leagues, he was the 89th ranked player, head-to-head a little bit lower, and he sits at 134th per game. No real noticeable increase in his value in post-All-Star break. Well, actually, that's not true, because he finished 94th post-All-Star, but the numbers, they just don't jump out at you as anything too exciting. Now, he did play the most minutes on the team at 32, 14 points, 1.5 threes, 3 rebounds, but 1.8 assists, 1.1 steals, and 43-79. They're okay numbers. They're okay. I just don't really think that there's a huge real upside for Avery Bradley. I think this is what he's going to be. He's going to go through hot streaks where he scores 20 points and he gets 2 steals and 2 threes a game. But then he's also going to go through stretches where he doesn't do much. And 12-team leagues, absolutely, he should be owned in pretty much all of those. I think 10-team leagues, he's a borderline sort of guy. Not going to be for every sort of one's team or team build, but there's no doubt he's got a role here on this team. Yeah, playing alongside Smart and alongside Thomas in that three-man guard rotation, there's definitely a role for him, and he is a pretty good perimeter defender. He can knock down threes in bunches at times. Not the best three-point shooter in the world, hitting 35% of his shots, but he's an okay three-point shooter. And the Celtics obviously like him enough to want to keep him around, to sign him to that contract last season. So he's going to be pretty rock solid. Not much of an upside, not too much of a downside for him either. James Young is another guy who's a shooting guard eligible player on this team. He was a rookie last season. We didn't see much of James Young. He played just 31 games at 11 minutes, 3.5 points, half a three, 35% shooting. It's pretty stock standard for a rookie. 55 from the line is not a good sign, and only 26 from three is also not good. But he just didn't get much time to develop. That was another thing I was a little bit critical of Brad Stevens for, is not playing James Young enough. His numbers, if we look at him on a per 36 basis, they end up okay. 11.5 points, almost 2 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 1 steal. They're okay sort of numbers. But does he ever really develop into a star? It's not going to be next season. I'd say probably 2016 is the year we're looking for him to develop into a decent fantasy usable player. And if you're in a long sort of rebuild in a dynasty league, he's a guy to sort of look at and throw not much out to try and get. His head-to-head per game rank of 457 definitely inspires no confidence in a lot of people. I think there's a little bit there for him, but I'm not overly excited with what James Young is going to be able to do for this team. moving forward. I guess a lot of it depends on what they do with Evan Turner, what they do with Jay Crowder, guys who can play along the wing as well, and play in his position. So that's definitely going to have some sort of an impact on what he is able to do, and all indications are that Crowder and Turner will be there next season. He's still under contract, but Crowder will be there next season as well, and that'll further force James Young into a second sort of development season. It's hard to give full judgment on him. We need to see a little bit more of him at this point, but if you're acquiring him, I wouldn't be spending too much, and it's probably not going to be for next season that we're going to see the big payoff. Evan Turner was one of the surprises of the season. He's still not a great basketball player to watch, but his fantasy value is generally pretty okay. 86th in head-to-head, 71st in roto. The last month of the season, he was the 60th ranked player. He was putting up really good numbers for big stretches of the season. Doesn't score, 9.5 points, 0.4 threes, doesn't do that either, but 5.1 rebounds, 5.5 assists out of a small forward is fantastic. A steal a game, 43 and 75, and that's good that he has been someone in the past who hasn't been able to really shoot free throws that well. He has worked on it the last couple of seasons, got those numbers up. First time in the last 5 seasons that he registered a steal a game as well, so that's an improvement there, and those assist numbers are a career high. And that last month of the season, he was averaging 7.6 assists a game. That's absolutely superb for a guy that plays small forward. That's LeBron James type territory. Now, with Thomas, and this happened with Thomas and with Marcus Smart there and playing. Now, Thomas was out for a little bit of that last month with that back problem, but he was still doing this at times when Thomas was around. So, Evan Turner, he's going to be back in Boston. Brad Stevens does like him. He does trust him to handle the ball as well. So, I imagine that he's going to have relatively similar numbers. You're not going to get the scoring out of him, but you're going to get rebounds and you're going to get assists. And that's what he brings to the table, basically, is great assist numbers, decent rebounds, the steals, average, and not much else. So, the fantasy value, it's concentrated. I think that's the best way of putting it in certain positions. He's not a must-own 10-team league guy for me, I don't think. But in 12-team leagues, I reckon you'd want to have him in all those sort of formats. And 10-team leagues, a good percentage of 10-team leagues would definitely benefit from having Evan Turner, because they're going to be able to use him at small forward and supplement maybe a lack of point guards. Because even if he doesn't get 5 assists, he might get you 4 assists or 4.5, which is, it's good. It's really hard to get from that position. Not many guys give you that sort of number. And if you can go crazy like you did at the end, averaging 7 assists, well, that's just fantastic. That's a huge, huge bonus for your team to have a small forward who can put up those sort of numbers. Other small forwards on this team, Jay Crowder, who came across in the Rajon Rondo deal from Dallas. I'm not a massive Jay Crowder fan, but you know what? His play in Boston turned me around. Didn't fully convert me, but it made me go, you know what? This guy is... He's got hustle. He plays with passion, which is always an important thing. There's not a counting stat for that in fantasy leagues. But he played well. Doesn't mean I think he's a good fantasy player. The 247th player per game in head-to-head leagues, and only 171st after the All-Star break. The numbers aren't that fantastic. Now, he was awesome in the playoffs. I'll give him that. He was really, really good in the playoffs. But his numbers in Boston, aside from a stretch where he came in and started and put up like 3 or 4 big games in a row when everyone was talking about him, it didn't sustain. His last 2 months, he averaged 11.5 points, which is good. A 3, 5.8 rebounds, 40% shooting for a guy who's a small forward, power forward, that's not ideal. A steal, 1.6 assists, 78% shooting. They're okay sort of numbers, and that's where he came in ranked 171st based on those numbers. They're okay. They're not for 10-team leagues. They're a borderline 12-team league sort of numbers. And they're probably 14. But remember, he's going to have to compete for minutes with Evan Turner, with James Young, if they give him extra playing time as well. And so there are guys around that position who are going to want to cut into his playing time. And this is part of the problem with the Celtics team is no one is good and no one is bad, really. We can look through the roster and go, okay, so yeah, they've got to give Turner minutes. They've got to give Crowder minutes. They want to get Young some minutes. Oh, but then they've got Luigi Datome who can play some small forward. Then there's Jonas Jerebko who can play some small forward. There's other guys at these positions as well who you can always make arguments should be playing minutes. Now, Crowder's going to probably average more than the 20 minutes a game he did for the season. A lot of that is skewed by what he did in Dallas. you'd expect him to get to 25 to 27. He could even play some power forward, which we saw him do last season as well. I don't think there's... I think that what we saw from him in that last couple of months, where he was a 12-team, 14-team league guy, is probably the best indicator of his value moving forward. He's never going to be a player who's much better than that, I don't think. As much as I do admire his hustle, I just think he's not a great player. He's not a good shooter. But he did definitely worked himself into a playing time and a role in the NBA. Now, he's a restricted free agent. It depends on what sort of deal he gets offered in restricted free agency, whether the Celtics bring him back or not. But I would imagine he's likely to be back in Boston. But you don't want to overpay for him, because in reality, he's just not that great, I don't think. On to Luigi Datome, who's a player that I've always thought had a bit of ability. He's a restricted free agent as well, came across from Detroit. Didn't do a huge amount last season, 329th in per game value, 229th after the All-Star break. But he didn't get a huge amount of time. 10 minutes in 21 games, but he still averaged 5 points. Now, 5 points in 10 minutes is really good. In 30 minutes, that's 15 points. Almost a 3 a game. But that's what he does. He scores, he hits threes. He doesn't do much else. 1.5 rebounds, half a steal, 0.3 blocks, 48% from the field. He's good. He's good from a guy who's basically a shooter. 45% from three. He's really impressive. Now, that's not something that he's necessarily going to be able to continue for next season or any other time in his career, because it's obviously a very high number, considering he shot 18% last year in Detroit in his rookie season. But we saw big improvements from him, and he's someone that I don't hate in dynasty leagues, but we have to be talking very, very deep, because I think he has the ability to go from, say, the 350th ranked player to the 250th or the 220th ranked player, not someone who's going to jump into the top 100, but someone who could have a rise in, say, 100 positions, which, when you're talking deep leagues, going from 200 to 100 is important, or is the same as going from 300 to 200. It's that extra boost in value. If you just get that sort of bump, it can really go a long way into winning your league. So he's someone who I think definitely has that little bit of extra value, just because I like the way he plays, and he's got a beard, so that's an extra bonus. Gerald Wallace, I do not like the way he plays anymore. He is the highest paid player on this team at $10 million. It is the last year of his contract. He was the price the Celtics had to pay in order to get those draft picks off Brooklyn in the Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and Jason Terry deals. We don't need to really talk about Gerald Wallace. He played the lowest minutes on the team, 9 minutes a game, 1.8 rebounds. If you own Gerald Wallace in a dynasty league, there is there is zero ability for him to get better than that. I think he's done. His body's worn out. He was great 5 years ago. It's clearly not that anymore. And we don't really need to talk too much about Gerald Wallace. Nothing is really improving from his point of view moving forward into the future. I'd be surprised if he got a veteran minimum contract after this season. He's just not part of the Celtics' plans at all. A guy that I am really intrigued about is Jonas Jerebko. Now, he is an unrestricted free agent, so we don't know where he's going to go. But I really think that Jerebko can play. He's got to be into a situation where he's given playing time. But he's a guy who can put up big numbers, and I think that he can be a really decent player. 16 minutes he played last season. 6 points, 0.7 threes, 3.8 rebounds, half a steal, 45 and 85 as his percentages, which, again, we need to look at them in a brighter sort of view, a look at the per 36 value. 13 points, 8 rebounds, 1.5 threes, 1.3 steals. They're really, really good numbers. But the thing that really stands out to me is what he did in the last 2 weeks. He played 17 minutes a game, but the numbers he put up there were great. 8.6 points, a 3, 5 rebounds, 1.5 steals. This is they're good numbers. They're very, very good numbers. Now, it came because we saw Jared Sullinger out, and although Sullinger came back towards at the end of the season, he wasn't providing much. Jerebko got a bigger role and he produced, and that's why that's always where you got to look at when someone is given a role and they produce. It can be a sort of a foreteller of things to come. He's a guy for 16-team leagues. Now, look, a lot of this depends on where he goes. And, he could go to a team who's really dying for a guy who's a stretch four. which is definitely what he can be in the NBA, and that would be a real interesting fit. I really would like to see him in Indiana, to be honest, you know, playing behind David West or you know, playing 25 minutes off the bench. 16 teams, 14 teams, that's where it needs to look at, but I think there's a lot to like in Jonas Jerebko. He might not ever become a good NBA player, but from what I've seen of him, I do really like what he is able to do on the court. So he's someone that I'm a big fan of, and I think that he is going to be a bit of a sleeper player for next season. He really came on strong at the end of the season. All right, let's look more at the big men here, the four big men, and this is one area that I was extremely critical of Brad Stevens last season. They've got two young guns on this team, Jared Sellinger and Kelly Olynyk. And the fact that Brandon Bass and Tyler Zeller were getting minutes over them was ludicrous, in my opinion. And I'll continue to say it. I support what Brad Stevens did all season, but playing Brandon Bass minutes when he's an unrestricted free agent is not going to be here next season, especially not at $6.9 million. When you could be developing Olynyk, you could be developing Sellinger, is just brutal to me. It just made no sense. Tyler Zeller's an okay piece, but he's not a starting caliber guy, whereas Sellinger and Olynyk can be. There's a lot to like about those guys. I had a lot of questions come in about these guys. Actually, before I touch on these guys in more detail, let's tackle some of these questions. B Ben, who's on Twitter at B Ben Badass, the Celtics seem to love Jay Crowder. Would you consider him as a keeper in a 16-team dynasty league? I guess it depends on penalties, B Ben, and where you got him. But in 16 teams, yeah, I think I would. And it, you know, not if you have to give up, you know, a 9th-round draft pick or anything stupid like that. But yes, I would definitely consider him a keeper in a 16-team dynasty league. Now, onto the big men questions. Barry Baker, I have Olynyk in one of my dynasty leagues. How do you rate his chances of becoming a top 10 center? Not high. I don't think he's going to be a top 10 center, but I do think that he is a legit NBA player, and I think he is a legit fantasy player. Alroy Rosenberg asks a similar sort of question. He says, Olynyk, I feel like he's coming up to something good. I agree with that. I just don't necessarily know that Brad Stevens agrees with that, and that's a problem. Now, we'll start with talking about Olynyk. That ankle injury he suffered really slowed his momentum because he was in a prime position to play big minutes with Jared Sellinger going down with a foot injury. In Roto Leagues, Olynyk, even though he missed time himself, he only played 64 games, he was still the 116th ranked player in Roto Leagues. His head-to-head value at 158 is much lower than I anticipated it being, but he only played 22 minutes a game. His numbers were really good for that time. 10 points in 22 minutes, a 3, 5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1 steal, half a block, 48%, and 68 from the line. They're really good numbers. He's hitting a 3 a game as a center in 22 minutes a game. I really, really like Kelly Olynyk. I think there's a lot to be gained from playing him. The problem I have is that I just don't know whether Boston sees it. That was his second season. He's heading into his third season, which could be a breakout. They should just be playing Sellinger and Olynyk together and letting them do what needs to be done. We saw Sellinger have sort of a mini breakout before his injury. He had 13 points, a 3 as well, 7.5 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks in his 58 games, 27 minutes. But again, he's not getting enough playing time. These guys just need to go out there and play. Bass will hopefully not be back, and we should just see Olynyk, Sellinger, and Zeller play the bulk of the minutes up front. Well, that's what I'd be hoping if I was a Celtics fan. Per game, Jared Sellinger, the 111th head-to-head guy, I think he should have been better than that. I think he should have been a guy who pushed into the 80s, but again, the minutes, 27 a game, it's not enough. It's just not enough. We'll have to see exactly what happens over the course of the off-season and the preseason as to what these guys do, but I think they have a place in all 12-team leagues. I think that they've still got huge room for growth for dynasty leagues, so they're going to get better than what they are. I don't necessarily think that Olynyk becomes a top 10 center like Barry's asking, but he could be a top 15 guy pretty clearly, and there's not going to be many centers that hit more threes than what he does. He's a triple one threat guy. He's a guy who could be a 15-7 sort of player with, you know, with a 3, with 1.3 steals, with a block, with 2.5 to 3 assists. That's the sort of potential that Kelly Olynyk has. Might not be a great NBA player, but he definitely could be a great fantasy player. And we just got to hope that the Celtics see him as that and give him those minutes, because then the numbers will definitely start to come. I'm a huge fan of Olynyk, as you can probably tell. I am also a pretty big fan of Jared Sellinger. I don't think he's got quite the upside of what Olynyk does. He had some disciplinary issues, missing practice, due to alarm problems and all that sort of stuff. So that's obviously not a great sign. The foot injury was not good after having the back injury the season before. Let's hope that he's fully fit and healthy and ready to go for the start of the season. But I think that both of these guys could. Well, you're not going to have to take Olynyk in the top 100. Salinger, you probably will, and I would probably be looking at taking him inside the top 100, because before he got injured, he was putting up some pretty nice numbers. But Olynyk is a last pick, a second last pick in 10 or 12 team leagues. I think there's a lot to like about him. The other big man, I said Brandon Bass. He had a reasonable season, 105th overall in Roto, 202nd though in head-to-head per game. But post All-Star break, when Salinger was out, 134th ranked player, he inexplicably got the starter's job. 10.5 points, 5 rebounds, not a lot else. 50% from the field, 79% from the line. They're really good percentages, and it makes him a bit of a Roto threat as well. But he shouldn't have been playing minutes over these other guys. He should never have been averaging more minutes than Cali Olynyk. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And Brandon Bass, I think it's unlikely he's back in Boston, and unlikely he gets a chance to play 23 minutes a game next season. He could go to another team, and if he does, you know you're going to get points and rebounds and good percentages, but that's pretty much all he gives you. Tyler Zeller, on the other hand, a guy brought in the offseason, he played all 82 games at 21 minutes each. Probably a bit surprising, his numbers, or to me anyway, 10 points, 5.7 rebounds, but for a guy who's supposed to bring the defense, only averaged 0.6 blocks, 55 and 82, and that's one of his real strengths, his percentages, 55 from the field, 82 from the line. That's fantastic for a big man to hit those, that sort of percentage of free throws. But I just don't think Tyler Zeller is really much of a player at all moving forward. He surprised me, there's no doubt, and he was the 78th ranked head-to-head overall player due to his 82 games played, 122nd in per game value, which is actually better than Cali Olynyk. I just think that the upside from Olynyk is much higher, and we've got to sort of keep an eye on the Celtics and see what sort of word comes out from them as to, you know, which way they're leaning. But Zeller has a place in 12 team leagues as well for a guy who can get some points, get some rebounding. He'd want to up his block numbers, but that real solid percentages is something that you can pretty much take to the bank with him, and that can be really valuable for a center. If he gave you, say, a block a game and 6 rebounds a game and 10 points a game, and then doesn't hurt your percentages at all, that can have some serious value that it can't be fully discounted. I just don't think he should be starting over Olynyk and Salinger. That's the way I see it anyway. I think that's all of the Boston Celtics guys. Let's see, any outstanding questions I've got here left over? No, I think that's about it. I think we've covered. Oh yeah, Bieber asked another question. Which Celtic will have the best fantasy value next season? I think it's pretty clear to me that it will be Isaiah Thomas, but we will see Olynyk, Salinger, and Marcus Smart all pushing themselves into the top 100. That would be my prediction. And Evan Turner may remain there as well. So I think we'll see a better overall fantasy season from the Celtics. We might not see them in the playoffs again, but I think we'll see some better overall fantasy numbers as Brad Stevens gets more of a handle on what he wants to do with his rotation and rationalize it a little bit more and plays a little bit more common sense with his rotations at times, which is something that he admitted that he wasn't having the greatest grasp on at the start of the season, and you know, more plaudits to him for that. That's it for the podcast, guys. The next one is going to be the Milwaukee Bucks pod, so make sure you send me through any questions for that one. Check out the videos on YouTube and follow me on all the social media accounts and leave a review and a ranking on iTunes and Stitcher for the podcast and comments on the YouTube videos as well. Help get everything more noticed here and help support the podcast in any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.